My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You're listening to a podcast along the Marketing Podcast Network. Want Instagrammers and YouTubers to mention your brand? Or do you want to influence an audience to buy your product? I'm Jason Falls, author of the book Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand. In this podcast, we explore the people, companies, campaigns, and stories that illustrate the difference between using influencers and actually influencing. Welcome to Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast. Hello again, friends. Thanks for listening to Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast. Influence marketing is truly a global phenomenon. We've talked to guests on this program who practice this craft all around the world, but we don't spend a lot of focus time understanding how influence marketing works in various countries and cultures. Fabian Fernando Guevara Juarez, who goes by Fabian Guevara for a shorter version of his name, reached out to me recently to trade best practices and ideas. I simply hit record because I knew the conversation would be fascinating. He is a content strategist and influence marketing campaign creator for Media House in Mexico City. His group works on influence campaigns for Coca-Cola. He's also experienced working with Mattel and other brands. Fabian shared with me his approach to influence marketing, which he folds into a larger 360-degree view of the consumer. A lot of what he told me that he, Media House, and Coca-Cola practice in Latin America was spot-on smart thinking. But he also shared that influencer marketing software and tools are looked upon with a large degree of skepticism in the Latin world. That surprised me, so we dove into that topic a little more so I could better understand that. The conversation was fascinating for me, and I know it will be for you too. I'm really grateful to Fabian for reaching out and sharing his experiences and insights with us. Before we get to that, though, it's time to get back to hearing more about our presenting sponsor on Winfluence, and that is Tagger, a complete influencer marketing software suite that allows you to find, connect, and collaborate with influencers, execute campaigns, and measure success. We've been talking to TJ Ferreira, the co-founder of Bubs Naturals, a health supplements company, about how he uses Tagger. What do you like most about the information you can get out of that about your prospective influencers?
Aside from the vanity metrics of the follower account and stuff like that, it gives engagement and demographic info. And the engagement and demo info is really important, obviously, to make sure that we do have overlap with our existing business unit or existing marketing strategy and everything like that. So again, beyond just the initial high level that most people, I think, are typically used to in terms of, you know, open up an Instagram profile and you just look and you say, oh, they have 3,000 likes and they have 100,000 followers. Like, is that good engagement? It could be, but more consistently, it helps you look at a macro picture across their entire account, across, you know, a month's worth of posts, et cetera, that allows you to aggregate rather than the initial spot check, which I think allowed a lot of companies to fall into traps earlier on the influencer game of just say, we spot check the last three posts and they all look good. Well, some of those engagements could have been bought. It could have been branded content. There could have been something on the back end that you don't know about. So do you have more of a macro picture and can you make an educated decision off that macro picture? And that's really, you know, what we're leveraging it for.
Thanks to TJ and to Bubs Naturals for sharing their use of Tagger. To learn more and get a demo to see if Tagger is right for you, just visit jason.online/tagger today. That's jason.online/tagger. My influencer marketing podcast recommendation this week is the Influencer Marketing Lab with Scott Guthrie. His weekly show is dedicated to the growth spurts and growing pains of our industry. Scott hails from Great Britain, where he is not only super connected to brand and agency players in the space, but he just recently founded the Influencer Marketing Trade Body, an association that aims to advocate for the entire industry. He also recently booked himself right here to be a guest on WinFluence, but get familiar with his expertise and learn from him regularly. Don't just wait on the episode of WinFluence he'll be on. Just search for Influencer Marketing Lab wherever you get your podcasts, or go to influencermarketinglab.com. Let's explore influence marketing in the Latin world. Fabian Guevara from Media House and Coca-Cola is next on WinFluence.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. So, Fabian, I'm really interested in a lot of things to talk with you about today, especially the differences in influence marketing and content marketing and whatnot in Latin America, Mexico versus the United States. But before we get started on that, I'd love for you to give me and the audience here a little bit of background. I know you work, with Coca-Cola at Media House as a content strategist, but give me a little bit of background. Tell me about your journey and the places you've worked and the brands you've worked with so people kind of understand where you're coming from.
Hi, Jason. Thank you. Thank you for introducing me in this way. Well, let me talk about you in just a few words. Well, I'm in charge of designing influencer marketing campaigns inside the Coca-Cola data center, which is in charge of crossing business intelligence, planning, media, and influencer marketing, blended up together to develop 360 strategies here. And well, and since that, my deliveries every day will be to design the funnel of the people who is going to buy our products in a more intelligent way. That's why we call it the knowledge group here. And well, and since then, well, my deliveries will be set up the strategies the way that the people will be interacting with our messages here, and also to crossing, you know, like these objectives. I don't know if it will be awareness, it will be engagement, it will be transactions here, and set up a specific and intelligent formats of the influencers to do so. So I'm charged to set up the frequency, the formats, the type of influencers, the measure that it will be measured, and at the end to make a full report of how to the product and the messages will have like an end-to-end return of inversion. So, well, that's what I'm doing by now. And well, and the past years, I began to running campaigns for Pandora, Forever 21, P&G. And in all of these campaigns, I run them that way in the old way. That's why I clicked with your theory, because I have this idea that before I work in the old fashioned way based on influencers. And since I moved to Coca-Cola, I began to think, well, Jason is right. It's all about the influence and the experience and the way that the messages can be processed in your mind to develop this fear of missing out sensation or urgency sensation. So, well, that's my story here.
Well, that's fantastic. It's really interesting to hear that because I love the fact that you said a lot of things that make me instantly know that you guys are doing things in a really smart way with the, 360, sort of purview on the customer and really understanding that it's not about the profile based influencer marketing in term, which when we say profile based, for those of you listening, it's really what that means is you're picking influencers based on the number of followers they have. And that's about it. You're just kind of doing a very superficial dive. So it sounds like to me that you guys are doing things in a really, really smart way. But I also know that you have expressed to me some concerns or frustration with the way brands really embrace influencer marketing in Latin America. What do you see as the biggest differences between how you talk to brands and what their concerns are there versus maybe what you see, us talking about in the States?
I believe that the main difference here is how advertising has been working in the past years. We have worked with endorsement campaigns. It was a big and famous one back in the 2000s with Luis Miguel and Ferrero Rocher. And this was this endorsement in which the actual influencer talks about, you have to buy this, right? And this has become more like a tradition. It works so in a so big way that every brand wants that since the 2000s here. And well, when you translate this to a cheaper, if you can say cheaper way with influencers, everyone wants that, but they ask him to do the influencers to do this on a post or an Instagram story, on a Reels. And they're not very much appealing with the formats and the language that the actual platforms wants the creators to do. So that would be a main difference. But also on the side of the influencers, we know that we have like this lack of technology or creation capabilities here. So since then, the influencers also accede to do what brands ask because it's all that we or they know. So, well, that would be a difference here. And I have seen lots of campaign here in Coca-Cola from the American side or even the European side. And well, I believe that it's going greater and deeper because it's all about the content and the way that the creator can bring organic traffic or maybe may bring an association, a positive association between equities. Well, I believe that that's the most important thing here.
Very nice. So if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is you've got these celebrity endorsements that have sort of, gotten brands excited about quote unquote influencer marketing, even though there's a difference between a celebrity saying, go buy this, and an influencer on Instagram saying, go buy this. And certainly you've probably got pushback from the influencers who are like, that's really not how I communicate with my audience. I'm not just someone you can pay to say, go do this. I wonder, how do you approach brands that say that's what they want? What do you tell them to explain to them that that's not the way it works?
It's all about the metrics, Jason, here, because, everyone just want their brand to be successful. And every client now in Coca-Cola, every brand manager wants impressions, for example. But if you're, I will tell you a case in that we have been working in the past months. We work with Powerade, and Powerade Fit is a specific drink that is for people that do exercise, but not so much to become an expert, right? So that was our product. And I want influencers who have lots of impressions here. I want everyone to know my product. But then what I ask them to think of is that, well, you want impressions. Do you want to impress everybody or do you want to impress a specific people? Okay. Since then, I told them, well, you don't want a big influencers. You want a specific influencers that talks about the specific topics of people who want to begin to do some exercise. Okay. That's the first step. And then do you want a metric that tells you that everyone is looking at you, or do you want a metric that tells you that everyone is putting attention on you and the benefits of the product here? So we begin to think, and since then we go deeper on metrics, and impressions is the first thing, but then you need to think about the retention of the view here, or maybe the space that is between reach and impressions, because it is telling you that people are reviewing the same content because it's interesting for them. So if you want that, you need to go deeper on content. If you want to really engage with your audience, you need to tell stories. You need to be close with the way that the influencer is talking about your product. So here I suggest to make a cooperation between our creative team, do a brief, but be open to the creativity of the influencer, because if you do this formula, the output would be a great content with value for the consumer and engage with the product because it is related to the content that the influencer is doing. So that is basically my pitch. Sometimes works, sometimes I have to do what the client says, but it is pretty much what I say.
Well, I can tell you from my perspective that that would go over really well, regardless of what country you're in. That's really smart, a smart way to approach it and a smart way to explain it. I love the fact that you started out with it's all about the data, because if you're using the data, it's easy to say, well, you know, this is what you want to do, and here's how effective that is, versus the numbers when we do it this other way, and here's how effective that is. That's a great way to communicate that. Now, I know that you mentioned earlier in our conversation here that there is a little bit of a barrier in the technology space. And I know you told me that influencer management programs are perceived in Latin America as risky. Explain what that means. Why do people hesitate when they think about using influencer management software?
Yeah, it is a lot of culture here about mistrust with technology. Well, since the pandemic, everyone began to trust about even food delivery in your phone. It was something that brings fear to it. Well, with the older people bigger, but even with young people, was scared about deliver your personal data or your credit card number. There is a lot of mistrust with technology. Okay. So when you translate this into a way to do business that is with influencers, everyone was scared about to do this because, well, first of all, there was a lot of rumors that and it's not proven, right? But it's a rumor that everyone heard that these platforms catch the influencer data and their passwords and use it for different uses. And everyone telling me that, even big and small influencers, they are scared of this. But in the case of the brands, they are scared to not being dealing with clean influencers in terms of fiscalization, maybe, or maybe with payments methods or contracts and that kind of things. Not in Latin America, we want them to be more professional. We also work, we have platforms in Coca-Cola. We have different ones. We have three, but they have a lot of tools to manage contracts, to pay influencers. But since it's so risky or is perceived as risky, we have a specific department that runs the contracts, the payments, and manage all of this like in the old school, because this brings us the capability to talk with all kinds of influencers, to pay them, and to build long relationships. And well, I believe that it's cultural. I believe it's all about fear. But I believe that it's the future now, because since you get more out of the mindset of dealing with these processes, you have more time to think and to create more ambitious content as well.
That's really interesting that there's a level of mistrust there, because if for those of you who are not in Latin America are thinking this through, think about if influencers were skeptical and afraid of connecting with these influencer marketing platforms. Now, a lot of them will just sort of scrape the public information, but if you're trying to run a campaign in a software like Tagger that we use here at Cornet, it's ideal for you to have invite the influencers to actually authorize their Instagram and their YouTube so that that data can come into your campaign report. But if those influencers are skeptical of that, then you're not going to be able to convince them to do it. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to measure things. You have to go back to, as Fabian said, sort of the old school way of having them report metrics manually and things like that. But it goes a step further with the contracts and the payments. If there's general, you know, societal skepticism and fear in the marketplace over trusting these technology platforms, then you're throwing a lot of roadblocks in the way for using this software. That's a really interesting perspective. Now, just for your benefit, Fabian, I want to reassure you that's not altogether not a problem in the States or in Europe or anywhere else. I've actually am working on an influencer marketing campaign right now. And one of my influencers, because of misinformation, said, well, I'm not going to connect my account to Tagger because they scrape your data and they use, you know, they get in there and see stuff that they shouldn't see. And I worked with that particular influencer and the folks at Tagger to kind of educate him on, actually, that's not accurate. That's a, you know, a rumor, or maybe that was true several years ago, but they've actually improved things so that you control, the influencer controls the data that that Tagger sees and reports to me for my client. And so once he was able to kind of talk to them and really get the truth about everything, he was more than happy to connect. We've been connected now for 3 or 4 months, and he's very happy with how things are going. And so am I, and so is the client. So you're not encountering things that we don't encounter. You're probably encountering them with more frequency than we are, but that's just, I think, a matter of time. I mean, once the, you know, you get enough brands and enough influencers educated properly about what these platforms can do and what they can't do and how they use your data, then it'll probably be a lot better. I wonder, though, and forgive me if this sounds a little, you know, prejudicial toward the country of Mexico or the countries that you work in. I wonder if part of the problem with the influencers and or the brands might be that maybe the government regulations aren't quite up to speed and aren't caught up, because in the United States, we have a lot of privacy laws. We have the Federal Trade Commission is making sure that influencers disclose that they're, you know, doing a sponsored campaign. I wonder how up to speed the Latin American countries and governments are with regulations in this area. Are they or are they not?
I believe that they are regulated, but they are not regulated enough, because there is a lot of spaces between what's been accepted and what's not. So since then, the basic laws, for example, in Mexico, is that the brands will be in charge of taking care that the law is respected. So it's not about the influencers, even that when they must be, but everything is based on the brand. So we ask every influencer to have all of the regulations on papers, and we use this in a very old school way too. They have to send us lots of paper, lots of validations, lots of different data for us to know that they're regular or legal doing business. So that's pretty much it. And well, before I worked with a platform, and that's called BoxFeed. And in this platform was like this, it was like 5 years ago. And we have the capability to pay influencers through PayPal. It's just a pretty easy way. But since it was an open space in the legal fiscal laws, influencers was avoiding to pay in taxes. So that brings up like this red flag for the government. So they started to regulate it in a more stricter way. It's go crazy for like 2 years. Now it's pretty much softer, but it is pretty much big. And I believe that that's the future of, and not only in Latin America, but in the world, to professionalize the way that influencers do business, because they're just not anymore people who do Instagram stories or do videos. They want to be, then they need to be professionalized in the way that they do business, in the way that they make dealings and negotiations and keep on track with their payments and manage their business as if it was an enterprise, you know?
Well, it's really interesting to hear you say that. And certainly, you know, influencer marketing, regardless of where it's being practiced, is still so new that there's a lot of growing pains that we all still have to go through, from government regulations and whatnot to influencers being comfortable with technology. And certainly when you have those, you know, lack of regulatory, you know, laws and direction for influencers, there's always going to be a handful of them out there that say, "Ooh, I can do this and pay through PayPal and not pay taxes. So let's keep more of my money." Right. So that happens, but governments are always going to be keen to that. I'm curious. I want to go back to something we touched on a little earlier, but I want to dig a little bit deeper into it. You know, you in the first part of our conversation here, we were talking about how brands, you know, sort of want that old school, "I'm driving impressions," and influencers are pushing back on that. Am I correct then in assuming that sort of the way that influencers look at creating content with brands is that they have a very, they're very focused on creating their content for their audience, and they're not going to, you know, sort of bend and break to just being an advertisement for brands, because that's certainly the way that exists for most influencers here and in Europe and other places I'm more familiar with. But it sounds to me like that's the case as well in Mexico, in Latin America, that influencers are very like, "Hey, you know, I want to collaborate with you, but you're going to collaborate on my terms, not your terms." Is that accurate?
Yeah, in some cases. Well, we have like these big influencers. Our biggest influencer and the one that we're most proud of is Juanpa Zurita, who is like the most close to the American way of doing content. And he's going further. He do YouTube originals, mini documentals. So he started to bring content to a new level. And even when you do negotiations with these kind of influencers, well, there's Juan Pasurita, there's another one that is big famous too called Luisito Comunica, you just not only negotiate based on money and scope, you negotiate about the way that the creativity is going to be flowing. So on the contract you set up, the creativity will be approved by the influencer, the agency, and the brand, to everyone become more friendly relationship, okay? And it's on contract. And here we have processes of approving creative ideas by signatures because it is a big important thing. But in the case of smaller influencers, it's not the case. I believe that the influencers of Latin America needs to be more not aggressive, but be more passionate about what they do and why everything that they do can function to brands. So, because if you ask a micro-influencer to do whatever, they will do it. So I will ask them to be more brave and defend their content to work it better, because it is not just only for them. If they do good content and organic content, will have better results, and further, they can sell bigger negotiations and scopes.
You know, you talk about micro influencers there, and it, you know, here in the last probably couple of years, some brands have started to shift to, instead of investing, you know, a lot of money in a couple of, you know, mega influencers or celebrity influencers, we're going to invest a smaller amount of money in a lot more micro influencers. So there's been this shift to the, you know, sort of smaller niche micro influencer. Is that the case in Latin America? Is the micro influencer becoming more prevalent in what you're doing?
It is a question that it's in everyone's minds. And I will tell you this, and I don't know if I can share this, but I believe that it is. If I have a disclosure agreement here, but we are running listenings and investigations about our own benchmarks to know which are the best influencers for each objective. And it's just about the last few words that we've been working on it, because we have these questions and every brand have this, but they do not decide about what is more efficient for me. They're deciding just on budgets, but that's not logical, but because the actual hypothesis is that micro influencers develop better transactional scores. Well, that's the hypothesis. So if you want your campaign to bring a trial or bring a transactional or leads or whatever, you need to work with micro influencers. But why, and in which cases, and what kind of content, and in which formats? Because there is brands that want transactional campaigns, but they just have money to pay stories or post. So if you have this money, you will not be able to to achieve your goal. So that's pretty much the question here.
Well, when you get to a point to where you have tested that hypothesis and you have a better diagram of which group is more effective for which strategy, please come back on the show and share, because that is fascinating information that I have a feeling will translate to whatever country you're implementing influencer marketing programs in. That's fantastic. Very, very smart stuff, Fabian. If people want to connect with you on the interweb somewhere, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
Well, my base would be on LinkedIn, and I'm Fabian Guevara. I don't know if you can get it in the spelling, but it would be Fabian, and then Guevara as Guevara. So that will be my name.
Well, perfect. I will make sure that we have links to your LinkedIn profile and Media House and some other places that we've got to connect people with you in the show notes. I really appreciate your time. This is fascinating stuff. The audience here, I don't think knows nearly enough about Mexico and Latin America and how influencer marketing works there. So thank you so much for the education day. I appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks to you. And thank you for listening. And thank you for talking. It's been great.
Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast, is presented by my book, Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand. Get your copy online at winfluencebook.com. While you're there, sign up for the latest ideas about influence marketing delivered in my monthly newsletter, or book me to speak to your company or organization about influence marketing. If you or someone you know is an influencer, a brand manager that uses influence marketing, or one of the many amazing people working in the influence marketing services world, and they would make a good guest for the show, email me at jason@jasonfalls.com. Our theme music is One More Look by the K-Club and Grammy Award-winning producer Jaquire King. Thanks for listening, and remember, when it's not about the person, but about results, it's Winfluence. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.